James Lee Burke, author of 30 previous novels and two masterful short story collections, has just released a gutsy, muscular suspense novel entitled Creole Belle. His credentials in the field are exemplary, having been named a Grand Master by the Mystery Writers of America, and he's a two-time recipient of their Crime Novel of the Year Award. He is, as well, a Guggenheim and Breadlove Fellow and a recipient of a National Endowment of the Arts Fellowship. His fourth novel, The Lost Get Back Boogie, was rejected for publication 111 times over 9 years. And when it was published in 1986 by the Louisiana State University Press, it was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. Burke grew up on the Texas-Louisiana Gulf Coast, and before mastering his craft, he was, among other things, a landman for Sinclair Oil, a truck driver for the U.S. Forest Service, a social worker on L.A.'s Skid Row, and a college teacher. Creole Belle is Burke's 19th Dave Robicheaux novel, two of which have been made into movies. Robicheaux, a former New Orleans cop, is now a detective with the New Iberia, Louisiana Sheriff's Department. His former partner and best friend, Cleet Purcell, is now a private investigator. Both of them are damaged goods. Though they've had astounding adventures in the past, in Creole Belle, Dave and Cleet come face to face with art forgers, racist cops, medieval torture chambers, creative drug abuse, Nazi war criminals, and a right-wing televangelist, all of whom are involved in a conspiracy to cover up the cause and effects of the Gulf oil spill. All this in addition to the normal psychopaths and appearance of a new character, Cleet's illegitimate daughter, who quite possibly is a highly proficient contract killer. If you think this is a bit over the top, you'd be two things: wrong, and someone who hasn't had the benefit of James Lee Burke's accurate portrayal of South Louisiana. James Lee Burke, welcome back to Around Cincinnati.
Well, thank you for having me on your show again.
A new novel, a new Dave Robicheaux, Creole Belle. What is it that distinguishes Creole Belle from other Dave Robicheaux novels?
Well, it's the 19th in the series. It's a very long book, but it's part of another book that is equally long. It's a continuation of the novel, The Glass Rainbow. It's one story, and it's about the end of an era. And it also has a backdrop story involving an oil well blowout on the Gulf of Mexico. And it has to do with, I think, many of the events of our time. I mean, that's kind of presumptuous of me to say, but that's the intention of the book. It deals, as all my work does, ultimately with neocolonialism in the Western world since World War II.
What do you mean by that term, neocolonialism?
Neocolonialism is the foreign policy that has dominated the Western world since 1945, and it has to do with the shift in power. It really began in 1914. T.E. Lawrence of Arabia, said it more simply. He was with the British, of course, in what later became Saudi Arabia. The issue was energy. It was the issue in 1914. It's the issue now. It's been the driving engine of everything in the Western world for 100 years.
Are we prepared to abuse our land and our people in its pursuit?
Well, we've done a pretty good job of doing just that, unfortunately. The book is not meant to be a diatribe against the oil industry. I worked in the oil industry. I was a landman for Sinclair Oil Company. I worked in what's called the oil patch. I was a pipeliner. My dad was a natural gas engineer. But Dave Robicheaux says at one point in there, as long as we'll pay any price, will accept any attrition for the sake of cheap gasoline, we're going to replicate over and over again policies that are not only injurious to the quality of life in our society and in the whole Atlantic community of nations. We condemn ourselves to the ultimate degradation of the earth. And there could be no worse illustration of that lesson than the oil well blowout of 2 years ago. You see, that's not a new story. It's an old one. I grew up on the Gulf Coast. Anyone who did knows oil is everywhere. I mean, it's systemic. It's in the water. It's in the salt water. It's in the fresh water. It's in the aquifer. It's buried in barrels. It's been in the ground since the 1920s. It is everywhere. It's dumped in open pits. In Louisiana, it is. It's everywhere. That's not a political statement. It's just a fact.
Yeah.
I get letters sometimes when people are upset about a statement like that. It's not an interpretive statement. It's a fact.
Whoever figured out how to distribute natural resources on the planet couldn't have done anything better or more comical than putting oil and natural gas in Louisiana.
Louisiana should be a utopia, but what has occurred there is that Louisiana is a very vulnerable state. It has the highest rate of illiteracy in the country, highest rate of child mortality. For many years, it had the worst rating in terms of its fresh water, but it makes it very vulnerable to people who provide better jobs for, by and large, the majority of working people. There's no question about it. The petrochemical industry was a godsend to people who had been dependent on the old agricultural oligarchy, who treated people terribly. I remember, and this was in the mid-1960s, a full-time worker in the field, white or black, who worked from what people call can't see to can't see, I mean from dark in the morning till sunset, was $5. People worked six-day weeks in cafes for $20 a week. This is 1965. I know I worked for the Louisiana State Employment Service at the time. Well, oil companies offered far better jobs, and I worked for them. That's how I went to college, as a landman. But there's a trade-off, and you see the big trade-off was the creation of at least 8,000 miles of channels from the Gulf of Mexico into freshwater swamps. Now, the guys who cut these channels didn't intentionally go out to destroy the wetlands, but that's what happened. Now, they deny it today. The oil companies, they have nothing to do with the degradation of Louisiana's wetlands. Well, it's nonsense. They did it. You know, there are attempts to repair it, but Louisiana coast is simply washing away. And the politicians there, this almost all, I can't give you a percentage, but I never met anybody in Louisiana politics who was not indebted to the oil industry. It's the sacred cow. You see, Louisiana is a place that provides tax breaks for the rich, low income taxes for the rich, and high sales tax for the poor. But they also allow the agenda of bread and circuses, drive-by daiquiri windows, Powerball tickets, casinos all over the state. But Louisiana's anybody's punch. It has always been that way.
And Creole Bell, the latest Dave Robichaux novel, I think is about all those themes. And Robichaux takes this very personally. His father had died in an oil well explosion out in the Gulf, right?
Correct. And I based that event on the blowout of a Texaco rig in 1964 that killed, it was either 13 or 18 men, I think. But see, this is not a new story. That's the point. It's an ongoing story. And it's already, the more recent blowout is already forgotten. And people were told both by this Obama administration and the scientist at British Petroleum, BP, that the natural processes of the ocean have taken care of the problem. I like to ask people, how long did it take for the oil that dripped from their car on their driveways to go away? And we're talking about millions and millions and millions of barrels of oil that were released into the Gulf Stream. That oil's hundreds of millions of years old. It's going to go away in 2 years.
Let me ask you one question. What does living in Montana do for your perspective on Louisiana?
The situation is very similar. The issues are similar, and it's the extraction of minerals or natural resources. And the minerals, the natural resources value in the state of Montana, it can't be calculated because we're just discovering it. But the same players are out here, and now they're drilling exploratory Wells on the eastern edge of Glacier Park. And if they find natural gas and oil there, duck. You see, the big issues when it comes to extractive industries are the ones few people look at. There are two things these guys need. They want to get rid of the Endangered Species Act. Any corporate lawyer who works for extractive industries will be the first to tell us that. It's ironclad. You can't get around it. The Sierra Club can find a beetle on the Alaskan tundra, and that's enough to shut these guys down. They despise the Endangered Species Act. The other agenda is to establish precedent, the precedent of drilling in what are sacrosanct areas, roadless areas, national parks. I don't think they care where that occurs. It can occur in the Everglades, the Grand Canyon, Alaska. It doesn't matter. They just need a precedent. After the precedent happens, it's like a loss of virginity. You don't reverse it.
In Creole Bell, you introduced a new character, Cleet Purcell's daughter, Cleet being Dave Robichaud's best friend and partner, running partner. Is she going to be somebody that reappears, you think?
Yeah, she's a great character. Gretchen Horowitz, Cleet's daughter, he did not know he had one, but she's an extraordinary character. Yeah, I think she's a really interesting person.
Absolutely loved her and the book. It seems it was a very personal thing for Dave Robichaud, this experience. Really gut-wrenching for him to go through all of this.
It is. You see, it's my intention in the book to portray Louisiana, number one, as it is, even though this book's highly allegorical, but to portray Louisiana not simply as it is, but as a state that is emblematic of the entirety of our experience as a people. All the things that have occurred in Louisiana have occurred earlier in the United States. The same thing, same players are there. But in Louisiana, they're simply more visible, and the situation's more dramatic, and the ambiance is one that is colonial. I mean, Louisiana, culturally, is a Mediterranean country. I mean, it's, Cleet Purcell says, it's Guatemala North. It's an open-air mentalist asylum, and it's a grand place to be and to live, but at the same time, there's a tragedy going on there, and it's not simply the destruction of the state, the cutting down. I mean, every day of oak trees that are 200 years old, I mean, it's heartbreaking, and they lop them down. You always hear little piggy feet running for the trough. It's that constant abrasive presence that just erodes the state away like someone holding his soul against an emery wheel. And that's what Dave Robichaud, who loves the state of Louisiana, sees every day of his life. It's really depressing because you can't do anything about it. It will not change in my lifetime. That's a hard acceptance to make.
Well, I'm so glad I had a chance to talk to you. Creole Bell was a great read. It's like one of those books that I didn't want to put down. And I didn't want to continue, you know, it's like this whole delayed gratification thing. If I read it too fast, it's going to be over. I don't want it to be over. So, James Lee Burke, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, it's great being on your show. Thank you.
James Lee Burke's Creole Bell is a great read, almost like a French conte moreau, a moral tale of loss and redemption that illuminates man's inhumanity to man and the environment. It perfectly illustrates the intrinsic flaws of greed, the divine joy of friendship, and that unique gem of America, Louisiana, third world and proud of it. Burke and Robichaud don't get old, they just get better. For more on James Lee Burke and Creole Bell, go to our website at wvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm David Delegater.